My name's Jamie. I'm an
alcoholic.
Now, the reason I say that I'm an alcoholic and an alcoholic, if you can drink it, smoke it, snort it, whatever, poke it, I'm all in. Where do I begin? Anyways, my sobriety date is October 18, 2017. I'm going to cry. I keep that day green because I know what it feels like to be hopeless, and that's how I got sober. I cried out to God, and I said, God, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I'm going crazy. And I called my dad. My dad's got 36 years of sobriety, and I called him. I said, Dad, I need to come home. And a little bit about my dad. He's a recovering alcoholic, but me growing up little, he was an alcoholic, he was an abusive alcoholic, and that was normal to me. You know, my first time drinking was through my dad. My first time ever taking a hit off a joint was through my dad. I remember being a little kid. And my dad used to always smoke pot and blow it in my face. And I used to love the smell of marijuana. And I used to sit down and just blow it in my face, blow it in my face, you know. So my dad was abusive towards my mom. I grew up, in that environment, you know. So I was full of fear. I was a scrawny little kid. I felt different. I had alcoholic behaviors before I became an alcoholic. Because I can go back and look, it started with, stealing money from my parents to go buy candy, and make friends in elementary, and it's crazy how I developed and play video games, And then as I got older, I used to start stealing pot from my dad and doing all that and smoking and stuff. I always was like a mama's boy. My mom, she enabled me. She was an enabler. I learned how to be a manipulator, at a very young age. All I needed to do was throw myself on the ground and cry like a little kid and I'd get my way. And those are alcoholic behaviors, I believe. A little nervous, but it's okay. but I am grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. One thing I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous is you're only going to get what you can put into it, And what I love about AA is there's no rules. There's no demands, you can make all the mistakes in the world and we're still going to love you, all we're here is to, try to help you get sober, it took me many years, so let me rewind. So growing up, so in 1983, my dad got sober. It was 84. Things in the house changed. I remember seeing my dad cry for the first time. I remember the day perfectly because we got a phone call, and I remember my mom. She was like, she answered the phone, and then I guess my uncle got killed up in Hanford in a DUI, in a drunk driving, his brother, so my dad went to the funeral, that was his last day drinking, and he joined AA, and my dad was still an asshole. He was still an asshole, because at that time, I'm probably 12 years old, and I've already developed all these, I'm already smoking pot at the time. I'm already, first time I ever took a drink, I was 12, it was around that age. It was a 40-ouncer of Old English, I was with my friends, I remember taking that drink, man, and I felt good, I felt a part of, you know. I drank and used for the effect, you know. It made me feel good. It's funny because I hear, like, sometimes I hear in AA people say that, you know, my worst day in sobriety is better than my best day sober. I kind of like, but wait a minute, because I had some pretty good times, you know. But I know for one fact that my worst day in sobriety is a lot better than my last day drinking, you know. So I just want to throw that out there. But anyways, so when my dad got sober, I'm off and running, and now I'm, so there's no more pot in the house, there's no more drinking, so we used to have pot plants in the backyard, and I got my ass whooped for, you know, taking some of the leaves off, because I stripped it one time, my dad beat my ass for that, so there was none of that going on in the house no more, so I seeked friends, older people, and hung around older people, you know, and I was on my own, getting drunk, getting loaded, you know, at a very young age. So, I was never taught any structure at home. Like I was a run wild ass kid at growing up. I was a mama's boy. My parents split up and I moved in with my mom, and, boy, I got to get whatever I wanted, you know, and, geez, you know, and it progressed. Like, school wasn't important, you know, hanging out with my friends, skateboarding, drinking, smoking pot, doing whatever was more important. You know, I had a hard time in school. Like, they were trying to find out what's wrong with me. You know, I remember going to the doctors one time. My parents took me to the doctors, and they were trying to find out what's wrong with me. You know what I mean? They wanted to maybe get me on some pills or something, or something. And I guess my dad's like, he don't need no damn pills or whatever. So I self-medicated. You know, I self-medicated most of my life. And, you know, my drinking and using, it progressed, you know. So that became my main thing, you know, because I was full of fear. I felt different, you know. But when I drank, I felt a part of, you know, it was more social. I felt, you know, hanging out with my buddies, they accept me, looking for acceptance and all that stuff. And my teenage years, I mean, I ended up dropping out. I got kicked out of eighth grade, and that was the last grade I finished, was eighth grade. And I went to high school, and my best friend at the time, we were eighth grade, so we were into skateboarding, and I remember doing my first line of meth. I was in eighth grade summer. And boy, did I thought I found my answer. You know, I was so focused. I played chess. I remember playing chess and talking, having good conversations and whatever. But that's another part, you know, so, cause drugs is a part of my story. Alcohol is a part of my story too. So anyways, partying and having fun and skateboarding was more important than, you know, learning some life skills of like going to school, graduating and getting a job. I knew nothing about that. You know, my mom took care of me, all the way up until I was 18. And, she enabled me. I would get in trouble, you know, and the police would be, you know, I started having consequences, you know, started getting in trouble with the law, you know, started stealing to support my habit. You know, I didn't care. You know, I stole from my mom. I stole from people I didn't know, to, you know, means and means to get more. And, geez, thank God I don't live that way no more. You know, but the consequences came. So mom was always there, and I made my amends with my mom, but it was like this. Like, I would run the streets, and my mom would be word sick. And this is how crazy it got. Because when I would get arrested, I would call my mom and I'd say, Mom, I'm in jail. She says, oh, thank God. I know you're safe. You know what I mean? That's crazy. You know? And I'm like, Mom, I don't want to hear that. You need to get me out of here. You know? You're sick. You know? And it was always, always, always She took care of me while I was in jail. You know, I learned how to use her for money and anyways, as time went on, the consequences of my behaviors while I was drinking and using got worse and worse and worse. I remember the judge telling my mom, he said, "Your son is a drug addict thief." You know what I mean? And I was like, "Jesus, you know, that's, so anyways, my first time, I ended up saying, okay, I have a drinking problem. And this is my introduction to AA. It was back in 1990. And I got a court card. And I'm living with my mom. My dad, he's off. I'm living with my mom. And anyways, so I started going to meetings. And I remember my first AA meeting at the time. It was a bunch of old people. And it was a room. And half the side of the room, people were smoking. And the other half weren't, you know, and there was a stack of court cards, you know, and I started to go to a bunch of meetings. So that, you know, the more signatures I got, the better it looked for the judge, you know, and I did. I kind of like upset, and I stayed sober for a little bit, you know what I mean? I did, but I didn't know anything about, you know, God of my understanding, anything about the 12 steps. I didn't understand it, you know. I was just there, you know, because I had a problem drinking, you know, and using, and I got in trouble with the law. So after that, I ended up going back out, you know, after I got the judge off my back, I ended up relapsing and had to go do some more, investigation or whatever you call it. And then I ended up, catching a prison term, did a couple years in prison, and I went to they had like a rehab. I've been to 8 rehabs, by the way. And my first time in prison, I went to this rehab, and it was like a 2-year thing. Then I got out and went to the halfway house, and I did good. I did good for a couple of years. I got a job. But the one thing I did, I wasn't honest. I deviated a lot. Cause you know how like you're supposed to go on outings with support, you know what I mean? And I would go out on these outings and I'd be support. I've been there for like 8 months and kind of like build my rank up in the program. So they trusted me. So what happened was we would go, I would be support for someone, but as soon as we'd leave, we would split up and go our own ways and then come back like we were together the whole time, which is wrong. You know, that's not being honest. I like what it says in chapter 5. It says, you know, we develop a manner of living, which demands rigorous honesty. It took me a long time to learn that, and I'm still developing, you know, you know, because that this program's about being honest, you know, and I had to be honest with Jamie. So I've been through 8 rehabs. Here we go again. And I could do good in a controlled environment, like in prison. I could do good in prison. But as I did like my 4th and 5th term, I started getting loaded in prison. You know what I mean? The party didn't stop. So then consequences started happening. I started getting in trouble. So let me see. I got out. I remember I got out from my 4th term and I went to another program because I get out and I go to these rehabs and try to straighten my life out. And, I stayed sober for like 4 months and, I ended up, every time I relapse, it's always behind alcohol. You know what I mean? I would think I can drink like a normal person. And so I would start drinking, and then one thing led to another. I found myself absconding. I ran out to Arizona, and I almost OD'd and died on fentanyl and woke up in an ambulance. And that was in 2014, January 17th. And I don't remember. I just remember I remember waking up in the ambulance and going, "Holy shit, what just happened? I almost just died." You know, lucky there was, I guess, the park that I parked in, there was a cop parked at the end of the park. I didn't see him. If I would have seen the cop there, I wouldn't have parked there. You know what I mean? I would have probably went somewhere else. So that happened. And mine is, I dragged my mom through all these years of from my behavior. You know, I mean, just dragging her through the mud. You know, it says in the big book, we're like a roaring tornado. You know, we go through people's lives just destroying, and that's what I did. You know, it's to the people closest to me too, because I'm so selfish and self-centered. You know, so I got out and got back, went to San Diego. I'm from San Diego. I lived 40 years in San Diego, and this is how I ended up in the valley. So my mom finally got the courage to say, you know what, I can't do this no more. I'm 40-something years old, and she says, you can't live here no more. And I said, okay, Mom, you know. She's like, I don't know what you're going to do. So my dad stepped in, and he says, well, you can come up here to Hanford and live with your grandmother, poor grandmother. You know what I mean? So I came up here, and this was in 14, and then I made it through New Year's of 2015, and I was living with my grandmother, trying to take care of her. She's telling me, you need to get a job, and da-da-da-da-da. I said, no one's going to hire me. I'm a felon. I got this record. I had that mindset. You know, I mean, I got 21 felony convictions, you know, and 17 and a half years in and out of prison, you know, and I was like, ain't nobody going to hire me, you know. So my mindset was screwed up. So anyways, I ended up drinking again, and oh God, this only lasted 9 days. You know, from the time I picked up, I ended up grabbing some other stuff, that dry beer, you know what I mean? That dry alcohol, and went on a 9-day run and found myself talking to myself at the casino for 4 days. And I thought people were after me, and ended up getting in a high-speed chase. Thank God, you know. I got in a high-speed chase, and I was trying to get away from Kings County Sheriff's, and I thought I was slick and I could drive across the dry riverbed, and my truck just stunk right into it. It just sunk. So I got out scared, full of fear, ran up a tree with no branches. No branches. Here's this guy up in a tree with no branches. The cops said, man, you need to get your ass down here. You know what I mean? I'm not coming down. You know, I'm arguing with them. I'm arguing with the cop, and I'm up in a tree, and I said, well, hold on, let me smoke a cigarette first, and then I'll come down. And I'm trying to fumble with my cigarette, and then I drop my matches. I'm like, ah, shit. So anyways, I come down, and I thought they were going to beat the shit out of me, but they didn't. And I started, like, I was in, like, this drug-induced delirium, whatever it was. I was, like, really tripping. I thought everybody was a fez. I thought they were going to beat me up. And they ended up taking me to the hospital. I still owe $4,000 on the hospital bill. I'll pay it. That's one of my amends I need to do. So anyways, I get sent back to prison. Mind me, this is funny. This is how my story. I get this DUI evading and here in Hanford, and I go back to prison for, I do 2 years, 7 months. And I go to fire camp. And because I'm one of those, you know, level one guys, I like, yes, sir, right away. I do what you say. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm just trying to do my time and get out, you know. And so fire camp is cool. You get to fight fires and go on mountains, and it's a good experience. I one thing I'm grateful is I learned some pretty good work ethics from it, because we work our asses off for $1 an hour. And geez, so. But the camp, it camps like being on the streets, you know what I mean? Because there's everything there. There's cell phones, there's alcohol, there's cigarette, everything. So I started getting busted in camp, and they started rolling me up. So I went through like 5 different camps. It's funny because I went to this one camp, and I went out for medical back to the prison yard. Then I came back in a week. And, well, anyways, I took a couple hits off some weed while I was at the prison. And they tested me when I came back with one of those little dipsticks, and it came back hot. You know what I mean? So I was like, damn. So they were like, they rolled me up, and you know where they send me? They send me to High Rock, which is in Humboldt County. And, yeah, this is crazy. They send me to Humboldt, and my first day at that fire camp, I think there was like 5 pounds of weed at the camp. I'm just like, Jesus, this ain't a setup. You know, so, I only lasted there for like 2.5 months because I ended up giving 4 dirty tests, got caught with a cell phone. I don't know if anybody has ever smoked spice before. Yeah, we got some not yet. Yeah, that shit's pretty crazy, and that's my experience of blacking out, because I blacked out on that stuff and didn't know, woke up on the floor. So what happened was, is I blacked out and I busted my head open, and the cops thought I got beat up, because like a couple nights before I got caught with the cell phone. It wasn't mine. And like, oh, you got beat up, you can't pay that cell phone or whatever. I'm like, nah. So anyways, they ended up blowing me up, and now they sent me to Conoctai. And the nickname for this camp is Sky High Conoctai. Yeah. And yeah, so I go to this camp, and it's another off-the-hook camp. It's the party camp. Everybody's trying to go there because it's off-the-hook. And here I am at this camp with I gotta pee four times a month. I'm mandatory 4 times a month. So my best thinking. So I get like 3 weeks to the house, and I start using again, because I know if I piss, I'm gonna get released before my bottles come back. That's how smart of a criminal I am. Crazy. I remember, this is funny. This is when I was out there. This is one of my best thinkings. I was like, okay, I am just going to get loaded and drink and not commit crimes anymore. And that's the one I got in this high speed chase. That was one of my best thoughts. So I get out October 12th. Here's where my story really gets good. I get out October 12th. I got a little bit of money from fighting fires, and I went straight to the party when I got out. I didn't even report till 4 days later. I got out October 12th of 2017. I didn't report till October 16th. I wish I could show you the picture, how I looked when I reported. I was sucked up, tore up from the floor up, and I thought I was going back to jail. And my probation officer said, look, he's like, I want you to sign up for this and this and this. And I said, okay. And I did all that, and I came back and saw him. And he asked me, when's the last time you used? I said, man, I used yesterday. I surrendered on the 18th. Because after I seen him, I went out for 2 more days. And I surrendered, and I said, man, I can't do this no more. It didn't take getting arrested and going back to prison, because every time I got arrested, I just kept fighting to be back out there, because I didn't. They're taking away what made me. They're taking away my baby. You know what I mean? My using and boozing. You know. But that's God saved me from myself. You know. So on October 18th, I went out the 16th, 2 more days, and I said, man. I'm living with my dad at this. My dad, the asshole dad, you know, he finally, I burned all my bridges, and I couldn't go back to my grandmother's. My dad took me in this time, and he was going to kick me out, and because I didn't even come home. I got out on the 12th, and I didn't even come home until like 4 days later. And then I took off for another 2 days, and he was like, man, he's like, so anyways, I remember crying out to God, and I said, God, I can't do this. I need help. You know what I mean? I need help. I don't want to die out here. I don't want to go crazy. I'm going crazy. And I gave him a call. I called him up at like, I don't know, it was probably like 3:30 in the morning. And I called him, and I said, Dad, you need to come get me. He's like, where the hell are you? I said, just come get me. I'm at the Circle K in Dos Palos. Just come get me. And he was all like, I don't even want to talk about it. Just come get me. And he came and picked me up. And I went home, and I remember I went to sleep, and I was like talking and doing the, I was talking in my sleep, and my dad's like, Jesus Christ, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, so that's my sobriety date. And then I started going into this outpatient program called GEO up in Merced in Los Banos. I started doing that, and I was serious about my sobriety. I was serious about recovery, because I've done everything except the steps. You know what I mean? I've been to meetings before. I've had like 2 years one time and went back out, had a little taste of the normal life. It was just going to meetings. You know what I mean? This was way back. And I remember crawling back to AA, you know. I crawled back to AA and I found this little group. It's called Los Panos Serenity Group. And I remember walking in, and I just got, they surrounded me. They surrounded me. Hey, welcome. I'm glad you're here. What's your name? And I said, my name is Jamie, man. I need help. And there's this guy, Russ. He was loud. He was loud. I was like, nah, he's going to be my sponsor. He's too loud. But I remember he had a year at that time, and this guy texts me every day still. He's been texting me every morning for the last, I don't know how long, for the last 3 years. I get a text from him every morning, and it's just a little saying, you know, good morning, you know. And so anyways, I started going to these meetings, and this meeting, I loved about it because they give out chips every month. You get a 1 month chunk, 2 months chip, 3 months, 4 months, five, all the way up. And I remember I got my 30-day chip, and I was so happy. I didn't have to freaking announce myself as a newcomer. But it wasn't that. But shortly after that, I started taking the suggestions, and I got a sponsor. And I had three guys picked out. It was a small group. And it was there was Joe, this guy named Chili, and Alfonso. And I picked Alfonso because what attracted me to Alfonso is he's an alcoholic, old heroin addict. And he was just like nothing ever bothered him. He was always this calm. There was a calmness about him. And, you know, I asked him, I remember I got the courage up and I said, Hey, Alfonso, will you sponsor me? He said, yeah, it'd be my pleasure, you know. And so we picked up the date, we started meeting, and so we met. Man, my first day I met him, man, I just wanted to dump everything. You know, I wanted to dump everything out. And he's like, hold on. We're going to do this one step at a time. You know, and so we started a meeting once a week. And, you know, we went over step one, you know, and admitting that I'm an alcoholic. My life is a two-part step. But what I learned from that step is that's the only step I can work perfectly at 100% is not to pick up a drink, you know. And then the rest of the steps is practice, you know, came to believe. And, you know, step two, there's a solution to this problem, you know, to restore me to sanity, you know. And step three, you know, is that I need to make a decision, you know, either if I want to stay in the solution or be in the problem, you know. And that's where I had to do my third step, you know, and trust in a higher power, you know, and give it. You have to do a thorough third step to get to four. And, man, I remember we met once a week, and we got to one, two, and three, and we would always meet in his garage. You know what I mean? And he had a nice house. I didn't care about the nice house, but we always meet in the garage, and then he gave me the fourth step, you know. And this was – I was so afraid of the damn fourth step. You know what I mean? I was so full of fear, so full of shame, all this shit that I've done. And that's what kept me going back out, man, is I was full of fear, you know. And what the book says is, you know, we make a fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I put it all out. You know, I put everything, you know, all my resentments, I was at the top of the list. You know what I mean? I was resentful at some things I did, some stuff that I've done, some girlfriends that cheated on me and all this other stuff, and just trust issues, and my parents, because, you know, when I was a kid, I knocked my two front teeth out, you know, at a young age, and I got like $20,000. They sued the city, and they never fixed my teeth, so I grew up with no smile. So I was like very, very, very self-conscious, you know what I mean? Low self-esteem growing up, but I held a resentment. I used to throw that in my mom's face. Jesus, man. So anyways, I got through the fourth step with my sponsor. And finally, it took me about a month and a half to get it all down. And this sucker finally let me in his house. He finally let me in his house, man. And I remember, man, he's like, I put it all out there man, it was so freeing to share that with my sponsor, all my resentments, my my deep secrets, all that stuff. It was so freeing. And he was like, and he disclosed some shit that he'd done. You know, I mean, I didn't feel so bad. You know, I was like, man, you don't understand me. You don't know my life. You know, that's how I always came into AA. And always, my problem was I compared, you know what I mean, instead of identifying. You know, I need to start identifying. And, geez. So I felt free. I ended up giving that. We burned my four step. And we prayed over it. Man, I remember just having that spiritual experience and walking out with goosebumps. And, man, and I remember calling my dad's sponsor. I was like, yeah, I just worked my four step. And he just laughed and said, welcome to the club. You know, we all been liars, cheats, and thieves. You know what I mean? We ain't no different. You know, so the character defects, we're going through 6 and 7. We work those together. And, you know, those are hard steps, especially step 7. You know what I mean? Because sometimes when I'm in self-will, I can get jealous, envy, and I still go through that stuff. You know, I can get lazy. I procrastinate. These are my character defects. You know what I mean? And I identify. And what I love about the program is that the program's teaching me my liabilities become my greatest assets. So, you know, when I grew up with all these resentments and fear, you know, my resentments turn into forgiveness. You know what I mean? I can forgive. The biggest thing was forgiving myself. You know, and making that amends to myself, you know, where there was fear, there's faith, you know. And it's funny because, God, man, there's so much I could talk about how my life is today. And anyways, but I want to circle back. Who does that? Circle back. You know who does that. You need to circle back one time. So, this is how, okay, I'm up in Los Banos and doing my program, and I had about 10 months of sobriety at the time, and I want to tell you how I ended up in Visalia. This is how good old Jamie ended up in Visalia. So I'm going to put it out there. So anyways, I got on a dating site, I got on a dating site. I was, my sobriety name was, I mean, my profile name was Sobriety Rocks. You know what I mean? I was all about recovery, all about, you know, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and all about that. And anyway, so I ended up meeting Sarah. And yeah, and we had a lot in common, you know what I mean? Because her mom's in recovery, my dad's in recovery. We kind of like hit it off. And I believe God puts people in our lives for a reason. I do. It was funny because me and Sarah have been together 3 years now, you know, and then she's in the program. And first she's like, oh, no, I'm not one of you. And I'm like, all right. So, but I let her do Sarah, you know. And I took her to a meeting. And I think, like, when we met, like, three weeks later, she goes, I think I'm an alcoholic. You know what I mean? And anyway, I was like, hey, that's not mine. That's none of my, it's none of my business. You know what I mean? You do what you, and, you know, she's coming up on 3 years in August. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny, two alcoholics living together, wow. But it's good, though, I mean, because, you know, she calls me on my shit, because I can get real lazy in this program, where I like to be comfortable sometimes, and sometimes I didn't want to come up here and share tonight, you know what I mean? I was like, man, I can get home, chilling, watching my Newsmax, and, you know, eating food, and getting pissed off at politics, and all that, you know, that stupid stuff. But, you know, I learned today that the service is a big part of recovery. Like, today, I am in service. I do have a service commitment. I do have a sponsor. I do have a sponsees. I have 2 sponsees. You know what? My sponsees, they're helping me more than they know. You know what I mean? And I'm so grateful for that. You know, and I was scared. I was scared to become a sponsor or whatever, because I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You know what I mean? But that's not my job to do the changing. It's God. You know, God does the changing, and he sure in the heck made it. He changed me. You know, I went from, you know, unemployable to employable today, you know. And this is how God works in my life. Talk about liabilities becoming assets. remember I got that DUI and I got in that high-speed chase? You know, well, part of my story, when I was out in San Diego, I used to love to steal cars. Well, I would steal cars because I hated to walk. You know what I mean? And then I hated to walk. So I used to love to steal cars. Man, I would steal cars, and I'm not a smart criminal because I would steal a car in the same neighborhood and drive around that same neighborhood until I get busted in. You know what I mean? And that was just me being an idiot. And I loved to drive. I loved to drive. So when I was in Los Banos, things started happening. I started working this program. I was living with my dad, taking care of my stepmom at the time. And my counselor says, hey, man, he pulled me to the side on some serious talk. And he goes, hey, I know you're doing a good job and you're taking care of your stepmom. And he says, you know, in order to graduate this program, you need to be working in the school. And I was like, oh, shit, I need to go get a real job, you know. So I kind of like panicked and called my dad. I'm like, Dad, this is what's going on. I need to go find a job or be in school or they're not going to let me graduate. So he was like, well, see if they have any trade or anything. So this is how God's working in my life. So after I got off the phone with them, there was a flyer on the wall in this program I was at. It was for the Phoenix Project. And it had truck driving, HVAC, all these things, right? So I called my probation officer. I was like, hey, you heard about this program? I left him a message. And I was like, yeah, I'd like to get into this program for truck driving and see if I can get in. And then I called the flyer, and I talked to the lady. She said, well, you need to contact your PO. I'm like, oh, shit, I already just made a phone call. You know what I mean? I was already one step ahead. So long story short, so I get accepted, you know, and I had to do four orientations. It was one a week for a whole month. There was these orientation things just for the Phoenix program to get accepted into the truck driving. And I got accepted, but there was one thing. It says you can't have no DUIs and no reckless driving. And I'm like, well, shit, man. I was like, well, I'm going to be honest with you. My last prison term is for an evading and a felony DUI. And he's like, well, we just got to fill out the application and see what happens. So I trusted God. I said, God, if you want this to happen, you know, I'm just going to trust in you. So I went to the truck driving school. I filled out the application, and they gave me a couple more things I had to put in the footwork. And they said, you need to go to the DMV and get a 10-year printout. I said, all right, here. And I said, all right, Lord. You know what I mean? This is all or nothing. But I already had, like, okay, if I don't get this, I'm going to go into HVAC, you know. So I said, okay, Lord, you know, if you want me to have this. So anyways, I went to the DMV and got a 10-year printout. I had 0 points, nothing on my record. And, I was so filled with joy, so grateful. It brought me to tears. I jumped in my car and started, like, driving real fast because I was so happy. And I had to check myself. I was like, dude, what are you doing? You need to slow down. You're going to end up getting a ticket or something. And I kind of, like, had to check myself because I was really happy. And I went straight to a meeting. And I was like, Joe, which my buddies, man. I was like, look, man, I'm going to truck driving school. So that was in April of 2018. And I started truck driving school April 9th, and I graduated and got my Class A license May 17th of 2018. And I've been driving for 3 years now. Wow. Yeah, through some little mistakes. I remember my first job, I got the truck stuck in a ditch. You know what I mean? Going on my own, instead of following the GPS, I think, oh, well, I think this road, I might be shorter this way. You know, I ended up getting stuck in an orchard. You know, that's the funniest thing about alcoholics, because we have a hard time following directions. You know what I mean? It's true. You know what I mean? And there's a saying, if all else fails, follow the direction. Because me, I'm the type, I'll buy something, I just want to put it together, and I'll skip the instructions, and then I'll get pissed off and be like, why in the hell is this thing bent? I got to go to the instructions, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, this is how you do it. Same thing with the Big Book, man. It's a design for living, you know. Think you can do this on your own. Man, we're almost out of time. I could talk forever. Jeez. Anyways, But yeah, the Big Book is a design for living, and I'm just so grateful for the 12 steps and working with others and being of service. You know, I keep it green one day at a time, and I work this program the best of my ability. And my greatest teacher is always my last mistake, you know, and that's how I learn today. The only way I grow is when I'm uncomfortable. I got to get uncomfortable before I can grow, you know. If you're new, you know, you get honest, you know what I mean? Get honest, take a risk, get a sponsor, you know what I mean? Go to meetings, work the steps to the best of your ability, you know, trust God, you know, and your life will change, you know. But that's it. Over time.